All right, so let me bring up the agenda for today. Can folks see what I'm sharing?
Yes.
Okay. So I started recording. Let's talk about status on the AAF. With TLS and Apollo, we've just been talking about it, but can you share with the team sort of where we are?
Yes. So basically, we decided to use the existing Beijing AAF instance for authentication and authorization. I managed to log in and create a namespace. Unfortunately, I'm not able to create the credentials in order to verify if it works from AAI. The credentials always give me an error saying attempt failed, specifics withheld. I'm not sure what it is. I didn't find anything in the documentation which would guide me or help me in any way. So I'm a little bit stuck on the issue. And Jimmy arranged that I can contact some people from Clamp who successfully integrated AAF, so maybe they are able to help me. Yeah, and that's all.
Okay, so essentially we have contacts with Clamp team who's actually successfully integrated. I think they're using two-way TLS. I think given how late in the process we are, I think the plan will still be to allow clients to keep the same credential as with Beijing, using basic auth in the demo. And perhaps if it's simple enough, we can document how operators could, you know, implement two-way TLS, but I don't think that for us and for the sanity of our clients, I don't think that we want to force all of our clients to have to move away from basic auth in Casablanca.
Then there is the matter of proxy, which would probably not work with two-way TLS because as far as I understand the process, we would not have a way to deliver the client certificate to our web service because it always gets intercepted by the proxy. But once we deal with the proxy in the future, if we have a basic auth, it should be a configuration issue to switch to two-way TLS in the future.
Okay, cool. And I do believe that, you know, maybe we can get more information about what the authorization step in AAF actually uses, whether it uses the whole certificate or if we can just do it using the subject, which is passed through the proxy.
Yes.
You know, as long as we do validation of the issuer. So hopefully we'll get some movement there. But thanks, Pavel, for your efforts in actually trying. And, you know, we've made some progress in that we can now get to an AAF instance in the lab. You know, with Jonathan Gathman being on vacation, it's kind of difficult to get support on, you know, sort of maybe the hand holding that we need And so we've reached out to another group, and I think that they are resourced, you know, to help us. And Catherine has said that they're willing to help. So potentially we will have, you know, a session immediately after this one, if the CLAMP folks are available. So let's move on to the next item. Kyung, you wanted to talk about AAI Edge Rule enumerator values.
Yeah, this might be a little open-ended discussion, so I'm happy to leave it to the end of the session if you've got other things to do first.
So basically, this meeting we have if you look at the item here, 5G PNF software upgrade, I want to save that until Christina can join the call. She's our subject matter expert with regard to our data model, or the runtime model. And so, I don't think that, Ben can join until 9:30. So I think now is a good time.
Okay. Okay, share my screen. So this came up because when I was doing the CCVPN schema changes, apparently I was doing them wrong and making everything a subcomponent instead of using a relationship list. And then the edge rules weren't applying, and I didn't understand it fully. So I've been trying to dig through some documentation, and I've started writing up this page to try and get my head around it. So I found these files here, this page on the read the docs, and then also found some other things which I'm not sure. From Gremlin about the direction, and I also looked through the code in this AAI schema ingest and AAI core components. So this is the example that's was in the read the docs, this particular edge rule. And I was also seeing that it's possible to write an equivalent edge rule, but with all the label, like the from and to and the direction flipped around. So I just wanted to confirm that I'm reading this and understanding it correctly, that these two edge rules are actually equivalent. And I drew a little diagram here. So on the left side, the tenant is the from node in here with the direction out, and the vServer is the to node with the, and that would be the in edge. And then the right hand side is equivalent, but everything's flipped around. So the vServer is the from, but the direction is in, and the tenant is the to, but the directionality is the same because the this direction one is flipped around. So is that part right so far?
Yes, so from what you have there, that looks right. The only thing is, the way we designed our edge rules, we always had to ensure that the direction is always out. We preferred what was on the left side. On the label, we had to use the Tosca edge labels. There was a restriction, I'm not sure. We have to ensure that all of the labels begin with Tosca or relationships. If that's right, Jimmy, right?
Oh. Okay, this one. So, yeah, because I copied this from this read the docs example. So, and I did try to find other labels that are in the existing edge rule file because I wasn't sure what was permitted in here.
Yeah.
So I do have a list further down because I just gripped through all of them, and this is what I found so far. And I'm not sure
whether this is a specific list which comes from some, you know, vocabulary, or whether it's just, as far as I can see, it's just the literal string that could be almost anything. But there does seem to be a pattern here, except for these ones to start with, and the isa seem to be out of place.
Yeah, the starts with and isa, I think I checked the edge rules. I think they were removed after Amsterdam. Like, you know, starting with Beijing, they shouldn't just have been isa. It was always going to be arg.onav.relationships.inventory isa, or okay. Something like isa. The preferred is like arg.onav or tosca.relationships.
So going back to this example, so this owns wouldn't be permitted, or it wouldn't be accepted. It would have to be something from this list. I'm not even sure if this is a comprehensive list or not, or it just happens to be the ones that are being used in the edge rules at the moment.
So I don't think we have a comprehensive list, yeah.
I think it's intended that the edge rules and the RxM itself is generated from the Tosca, or okay. at least relates to the Tosca. So there are Tosca YAML files which are produced by SDC, which describes all of the, you know, permitted node types and the permitted relationship types. And I think it's intended for the RxM and the edge rules to reflect the Tosca description. Now, currently the RxM and the edge rule files are not actually automatically generated from the Tosca. Although I think Amdocs have worked on a application that would do the generation from Tosca to edge rules and RxM. But that's currently not in ONAP. But I think going forwards, it is the intention to eventually generate these two files rather than hand editing them. So therefore, the contents of these files should align with the Tosca definitions, even if we're just hand editing them at the moment. So going back to the relationship labels, they should ideally be what's defined in the Tosca files.
Okay. All right. So eventually this won't be necessary because it will be generated from the SDC output. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And we prefer the direction to be out, because when we do start auto-generating it, I think the direction is always going to be out. So we might even get direction altogether.
Yeah, so it's one of my questions I have further down about the evolution of this format. Yeah. So I guess the next part is this multiplicity. As I understand, the first part always refers to the in node, and the second part always refers to the out node. Is that right? So I'm assuming here what I've written, these are equivalent. So the multiplicity is the same, but the direction and the from to are flipped around. So it should describe the same thing.
Hey, Jimmy. Christina joined.
Hey, Christina. So thank you for joining. I think Christina probably understands the question. So she just joined. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, okay, so just try to understand the edge rules and how they relate. I've tried to, this example on the left is the one from the documentation, and the one on the right is, I think, the equivalent, but with a few things flipped around, because that's apparently permitted. So I just wanted to confirm with this multiplicity, the one-to-many here refers to the in node, and the many refers to the out node. And because of
the
way
the one on the, I mean, these edge rules aren't real, right? Let's go with that to begin with, right?
It's
so
close
the one on the left, right? The label really would be like owned by, so tenant is owned by vServer and the multiplicity is wrong. It would be, usually it's belongs to is what we use. So tenant, actually no, vServer belongs to tenant. Okay. Sorry. So vServer belongs to tenant. It is a many vServers to one tenant if you're going in the out direction. If you're going in, which is something we decided not to do, then it would be one to many. But since we decided to keep all the edges in the out direction when we did an edge change to align everything with Tosca, it would be vServer belongs to tenant out, many to one, contains other V in the not direction, which would be the in contains the out.
Okay, so you're saying that this example that I've written as the equivalent rule, this is not permitted anymore, or is it just not preferred?
That is how it works now. The one on the left is actually the older style with the parent owning the child, which we went away from. Because if you look at the requirements and capabilities, really the edge should be in the other direction, was the argument that was made.
Okay. So, yeah, I just pulled it from this Read the Docs page, which had this as the example. I did find in the actual edge rule file, currently it's written, I think, this way with the belongs to label.
But then the direction is out.
Yes, the direction is out. Okay. So,
Jimmy, maybe I need to take a look at that wiki page and make sure that it reflects the current state of the rule.
Yes, I'm just trying to understand all the components of it. So when I write my new edge rules, that I can see that I'm doing it correctly. So I put these sections down here where I'm trying to explain to myself what it means. And I appreciate if you could review it and confirm or correct any mistakes that are here. So, yeah, basically, I think that these two equivalent, that the in node is vServer as written, even if it's not exactly what it should be, and the out node is the tenant in both cases.
So, yes, those two rules are functionally equivalent, though the multiplicity is wrong in the second one, if you wanted them to be equivalent.
Sure. Oh, is it?
Flip the multiplicity as well. Because the multiplicity doesn't work in terms of direction, it works in terms of from and to.
I read somewhere that it works in terms of in and out rather than from and to. That's why I didn't flip it around, because it seemed to be. So this one says in to out. So if it's one to many, then the one always applies to the in, regardless of how the direction and the from and to. So it's the in edge. And the second part is always the out edge. So that's why I thought that flipping this around here, the multiplicity would actually stay the same, because the in is still the vServer and the out is still the tenant.
Harish, were you going to say something?
I don't think that's right, because the way it's defined in the way we are using Jan, I don't know the documentation, but I mean, I don't know what documentation, because the Titan was what we were using, and there was different versions of the Titan. I'm not sure which one that you were looking at. The one that we looked at, like, it says that when you have vServer to tenant, well, if this was an out edge, then it should have been many to one, because this was I'm talking about the one on the right. If
one on
the
right.
Direction was out, I think the way you have it, I think it could No, because because you have it at the direction it's in, this multiplicity could work, but we prefer to use the direction out because that's why the multiplicity had to be set. So that's why if the direction was out, the multiplicity had to be many to one.
Yeah.
Because then, I think that makes sense.
Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to get straight in my mind, that this right hand side is the equivalent of the left hand side. Okay. It may not be a real example, may not be the preferred way, but
yeah,
it should be equivalent, right?
It should be equivalent. The only.
Okay. As long as I've got the right interpretation there, because I'm still trying to get it straight in my mind. So in that case, the multiplicity here, in both cases, it should read the same way, that each tenant has one vServer, each vServer has many tenants, as written here.
So I'm going to assume that you're right, Arish, and that this works. I'm trying to find the original file when we were originally doing the flip, but I can only find my corrected files with all the directions being out.
Yeah, I had to. Yeah, I'm not sure. King, I have to get back to you on this too because it's.
Okay, no problem.
The way you read this, I had to take a closer look at this and verify this.
Sure. Okay. So I'll just quickly go through the next few bits here. I think this one contains other V, where V means vertex. So I think the way it's written here, with this direction, it means out. And with this, it means opposite of in, which is also out. So the way I should understand it here is that if I fetch the data for the out node, then it would include the data for the in node. In other words, if I fetch the data for the tenant, then it would include the data for the vServer. Again, I'm assuming that's these two are equivalent, the left and the right versions. And then for the delete other vertex. It actually says none here. So in this particular example, it means do nothing. So if I delete the out node, then do nothing to the in node. So that means I can delete the tenant without doing anything to the vServer.
Yeah.
Okay. This SVC infra, I don't really understand what it is or how it works, but
I wouldn't worry about this one because it's really an outdated concept that's sort of moved away from and just needs to be removed.
Okay. I see it in the current Edge file, so I wasn't sure if I needed to.
It was used for an older type of query that we no longer support.
Okay. So I'll be okay if I just drop it out of any...
Just drop it out. It's fine. Okay. Or just always leave it as none.
And the last one here is the prevent delete. So in this case, the direction here is out and the opposite direction is in. So I can read it as prevent the delete of the out node when it's related to the in node, but allow the delete of the in node. So that means in this case, prevent the delete of the tenant when it's related to a vServer, but allow the delete of the vServer. Again, I'm just interpreting that from this read the docs page and then trying to translate it into something I can work with. So that's my example. I appreciate if you could go over that and confirm that I've got the right interpretation. For each of the nodes, I was trying to work out what to put in the fields.
as far as I can see from reading the code and looking at the existing ones, the from is always just a literal value that's ingested as written, but it's expected to match this XML root element in the OXM file, which is basically the name of the class there. And then I think internally in the code, there's some normalization, which does this. So the from and the to, if they're flipped around, then internally the comparison puts it into this alphabetical order and does this removing the hyphens as well. And then the same process we have on the to field. The label we talked about, so I wasn't sure if this was a comprehensive list, but if it comes from, if it's going to be generated from Tosca models, then I guess we can look under what the Tosca definitions have for everything that we need.
Are there any Tosca definitions available in ONAP? Do we have a Tosca definition for the current OXM and edge rules?
I don't know.
Does anyone know on the call?
Yeah, I mean, SDC is delivering the Tosca model, right? Whether or not that's comprehensive to create our schema, I don't believe that it is, but you know.
Yeah. But is it actually available from anywhere? Is it in Nexus or is it checked in somewhere? If we wanted to see it.
Oh, I think I've been working with Michael Lando on that topic for the PNF stuff. And he has shown me some Tosca models that could be used. I don't know that we've actually designed any, but we've talked about what would be in one for PNF plug and play at least. It probably depends on the context and what you're trying to design specifically, but I would think you should be able to use the STC Design Studio to make something. In our discussions with Michael in STC as the PTL, I mean, he's sort of on the fly design stuff for us. So.
Yeah, because I know.
Are you just looking for like a sandbox to play with, or what's the purpose? Or were you?
No, I'm just wondering if the Tosca file containing all of the current object types and relationship types in the OXM is available anywhere. I know outside of ONAP internally we've got a file which. You know, if we add a new object to the OXM, we update that file to add a new object to the Tosca, so we keep them both kind of aligned. So I was wondering whether the Tosca is also available in ONAP for us to keep aligned. You know, when we change the OXM, we should really change the Tosca.
So I thought you, your team would have known the answer to that.
I'm not
sure.
Yeah, I don't know where it is in. I've never seen it in ONAP, but I've seen it, you know, in the private repo.
So maybe we need to talk to Michael, Jimmy, about the status of the inventory Tosca type, which is separate from the types they actually use in SDC. I mean, obviously, the goal would be that the modeling subcommittee would help align those two, because right now they're not entirely equivalent.
Yeah. I'm just worried that we're adding lots of stuff to the OXM and not notifying SDC about this so that they can keep the Tosca model aligned with it.
Well, this part is actually not in the OXM file. This is only in the edge rule file. And I got this list by grepping all of it.
Yeah. Both the edge rules and the OXM are defined in the Tosca. So if you change the edge rules, you need to change the Tosca as well.
Mm. Okay. So as far as I can tell at the moment, this is just a literal string, which means you can type anything you want to, but I guess it should be one of these to fit with the convention. In the direction field, look at there's four things that you can put in, out, none, and both, which is appears to be based on the Tinkerpop, but I think none is an extra field which doesn't exist in the Tinkerpop one. And I also saw through the code, there's actually two different default values used. I'm not sure if this will actually have any effect, but in case you type in the wrong thing in different places, it might give you a different direction. And it looks like the comparison is case sensitive in this particular one. Multiplicity, I found these four with the default value being the many to one. And this is a case insensitive comparison. For the contains other V, delete other V, and these other ones, it looks like they accept the specific in, out, both, and none, but also the special direction and opposite direction. Looking at what the word opposite means, in becomes out, out becomes in, both becomes both, and none becomes both. I'm not sure whether none is a useful value to put anywhere, but
the code appears to be. The thing is, the direction can only be in or out, and we don't use none or both. So I think the idea was the not the direction would just be in or out. We don't use usually the direction both or none.
I'm just trying to work out what all the values are. So you're saying that direction would never be none or both? I mean, direction none on an edge seems like
you're trying to... That's correct. It. Yeah. Direction is either in or out.
Okay.
And the values for contains of the V can be none, but not and the direction in or direction not in. So you don't have to do that both or none. Okay.
So let me confirm with you then, in terms of navigability, are you saying that it's always bidirectionally navigable from both ends?
Direction is can only be one direction, so it can either be in or out. That's the direction.
But in terms of saying tenant to vServer relationship, so if I start at a tenant, I can navigate and traverse to get the vServer, but if I start from the vServer, I can also traverse to get the tenant. Is that correct?
Yes.
So even if I just put one rule with one direction, as an out, for example, I can still traverse.
Yeah. From either you can start with vServer and then find the, you can traverse through to find the tenant.
Right.
Even if you put it in one direction.
Okay. So, and in terms of the ANAR data, if I have a relationship list attribute in the relationship, the data would appear from both ends. So in the tenant relationship list, I can find a vServer object, and in the vServer relationship list, I'll find the tenant.
No, the relationship list is different. The relationship list only finds the relationship list that you would find in ANAI is only for cousin edges. So anything that contains other V is only edges that have contains other V is none.
Other V is none.
You're talking about the relationship list in ANAI, right?
Yeah, the schema element called relationship list.
Yeah, the output of that, the things that will be coming out of the relationship list is if a tenant is related to some other complex, or the complex would show up in the tenant relationship, and in the complexes with payload, the tenant would show up in the relationship list. But and when you have child edges in a tenant, when you do a get on a tenant, you will see the vServer, but when you do a get on a vServer, you wouldn't see any tenant information.
There's two kinds of relationships. There is a containment relationship And there is a, I guess you can call it a cousin relationship. And the way you can tell which type of relationship it is by looking at the contains of the V. Right. So if contains of the V is in or out, i.e. is not none, then that means this relationship is a containment relationship. If contains of the V is none, it means this relationship is a cousin relationship. If the relationship is a containment relationship, you won't get a relationship list. Instead, what you'll see is the relationship is expressed through the nesting of the objects, right? So if a tenant contains a V server, when you retrieve a tenant, you will see that the V server object is nested within the structure of the tenant. It's a sub element of the XML. Now, if it's a cousin relationship, you retrieve a tenant, you won't see the nested V server. What you'll see is a relationship list entry pointing to the V server. Right. So there are two ways that a relationship can be expressed. So what Harish is saying is you will not always see the relationship list element. You will only see that if the relationship, if contains other V, is set to none, basically it's a cousin.
Okay. All right, this is confusing me even more about the relationships in my schema modeling as well.
Yeah, I mean, it just defines how that data is presented. When you retrieve something from ANAI, the relationship that contains of the V parameter dictates how the related object is presented to you. You know, is it presented as a child object within the hierarchy, or is it presented as a related object link? So it's just how it's returned by ANAI. But the relationship itself, you know, in the graph database, it's all the same. It's a vertex from the tenant. Sorry, it's an edge, you know, linking the tenant and the V server vertices. Right. So in the database, it's stored in the same way. It's just that when you retrieve it through the API, how is that data expressed? Is it a nested hierarchy, or is it a linked relationship?
Okay. Okay. So I guess, Jimmy, I might have to send you a copy of my OXM file and edge rules, because I've gone one way and then gone the other way, and now it seems I need to go a third way to get this working correctly, and I'm not sure that I fully understand it yet. So I guess I'll just jump to the end of these questions at the end. When I started writing the edge rules, I found that they weren't being generated into the HTML file documentation. So just jump to the bottom here. There's a section here where you get these related nodes, which seem to relate to the edge rules. So I was wondering, is there a way of finding or removing the unused or redundant edge rules, because I don't know which ones are actually applying if they don't appear in the generated HTML. Also, is there any plan to change this format? Because I find it very confusing to write them correctly, especially now you're telling me that certain possibilities are actually being deprecated. And the third one, yeah, it's just about what this default means, because basically in V13, 224 out of 226 have default true, and for reasons I don't know, two of them have default false, so I don't really understand what that means.
The default is only ever false if there is a multi-graph scenario where you can have two different types of edges, the two different edge labels, between the same two nodes. Right. So for example, I think the example in question is that there is an interface connected to a link, or two interfaces connected to a link, and they have a links to relationship to that link. Then there's a more specific relationship of this is the source for the link and this is the destination for the link.
Okay.
And the way that that ends up being created is the client specifies which edge label they want to use. If they don't specify the edge label, it just defaults to whatever the default true is for that, for those two nodes.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, that's it for me, Jimmy. I appreciate if anybody, Christina or Harish, if you could put some comments on here and just confirm what I've written here, and I'll try and send you my my OXM file and my default and my edge rules to see if I've got them right. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. So next item, I think Benjamin, do you have any material to show?
I do. So let me bring up my screen. Let me bring up the file here. Share screen. Okay, can you see my screen?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So I've been working the plug and play use case in Beijing and Casablanca, and you can get these slides from the wiki. Let's see if I can find how to go to the chat where, you can see my screen, right? Oh, there it is. Okay. See, I see chat. Okay. all right. Let me just chat here. All right. So, and from there you can get all these other links where we talk about modeling and what's in Casablanca and so forth. So for the plug and play use case, I'm not sure how familiar people are with this, so I'll just take a minute or two to go over the very high level. Basically, the plug and play use case happens in five stages in design time and runtime, where you're modeling the PNF, it gets instantiated, and the unit comes up, contacts ONAP with a PNF registration, and activates. So in the in the wiki, there's a, let me see. So you can read a lot more details about it if you're interested in this link here. Okay. So I created a page which describes how plug and play works and all the, you know, all the stages and stuff. And in here, there's a section on ANAI as well. So this is the ANA entry used by Plug and Play, which is basically what's there now in Beijing. But what we're really interested in is what's happening in Casablanca, right? So in these slides, there's a section for ANAI for Casablanca. So the Beijing stuff is there and is described in a more sort of orderly fashion here. And these are the things that we were considering for Casablanca R3. And I've discussed this with Christina. I had a meeting with Christina before and have been on email exchanges as well. I've also added these to the ANAI page. Jimmy had a list of action items to discuss and stuff, so you'll see it on the ANAI page as well. So I added these there. So we discussed. I brought this to the modeling team and to, you know, Michael Lando's team, and we've been working through just modeling for the PNF in general. So the one parameter for geolocation, we said this could be modeled by the complex object. They seem relatively okay with that. I think their questions are more around how to, what is the complex object? We've talked about the software version list. At first we thought we could just add a pass, oops. At first we thought we could just add a passive software, but I think the discussion is that we should have a software software version list is the thing that we want in any AI. So in the modeling discussions, we've also introduced this to the PNF model. And I think this is hopefully through the lots of discussions, and Yao Guang has sent an email today from summarizing what we talked about at the modeling call yesterday. So he had pretty much summarized what we discussed. So there would be a software version list that would be introduced in AI. These other things are still kind of open, actually. So the one is about Cloud Home. So this concept of a CLI code, C-L-L-I code, which basically kind of specifies sort of the cloud home for a thing. And in my other discussions, it was also suggested that perhaps the complex node can capture all that information. And I tried to describe as best I could on the modeling call that this is already represented by the complex object, and people still weren't satisfied. So I think we need somebody to attend that Tuesday call. I invited Christina to attend the call yesterday, but she wasn't able to attend, I guess. So I think maybe we need these two teams to kind of meet and discuss this topic. So I can't quite close on this topic yet. It seems that people are unsatisfied with the solution of using the complex object. The manager, so in the PNF has some kind of manager, a NMS, a network management system, or an EMS, an element management system. And we wanted some additional information, like an IP address of that manager. So Christine had suggested, well, can we just model the NMS as a PNF? And then you can do all sorts of stuff. Once it's modeled as a PNF, you can provide like links with it and things like that. So I brought that to the community, and they said, yeah, that is one possible way, but really all we need is just an IP address, and can't we add that into the PNF ANI entry? so maybe that also needs some more discussion with the group as well. We've been also discussing the software version for a number of weeks. So let me just show you that. Okay, so I have modeling slides as well. And you can get these modeling slides if you, so in that thing I put in the chat, it'll have a link to these modeling slides here. Okay, so these are the modeling slides I'm about to show you here. So in the modeling slides, we talk about the PNF model, the creation of a service, the artifacts that compose the Caesar package, et cetera, et cetera, right? All sorts of discussions about how to associate a controller for an NF, which is a meeting happening tomorrow. And as well as the ANAI entry, which you guys here obviously very tuned into. Somewhere in here, there's a section on ANAI. Okay, so for reference, you know, we're talking about all the aspects of ANI. And then in the actual PNF model, we've been discussing what would be in the PNF model in Casablanca. And the main thing is this software version list. And I created a dedicated slide just for talking about the software version list and what it would look like and what it is. So it's basically just a list of literally just a simple list of software versions. And it would be captured as a Tosca, as a property in the Tosca model. Okay, let's see, so.
So in the Tosca model, they aren't going to say which one is
the active software version. So doesn't that need to be added to your software list property?
So the model is a little different. The model is just simply it's the network view of the software version. It's the expected software version. Whereas in the instance at runtime, the ANAI captures what the unit actually has. So it's the detected software. When you're designing a network, you say, you know, this region here needs this software, or I'm expecting this region to have this software, or these, you know, 10 Tiger sites have that software. And, you know, the overall network as a whole is going to go to this software in this time. So it's meant for managing kind of the whole network. So it doesn't need a concept of this is what the active software is, as much as the runtime thing does. So in runtime, when a PNF comes alive, it can have multiple partitions on it. Not all PNFs will have that, but certainly a 5G base station, all the ones that I've ever been aware of do at least have one partition or more. So basically it does that because you can do all sorts of things with that second partition. You can fall back. You can, if you have a problem, you can go back to a version that you know works. You can run a trial sites where you're sort of going to a future version of the software that you will be rolling out. and if there's a problem with your current software, you can, you know, as it reboots or encounters a software problem, it goes to another partition. There are sometimes concepts of like sort of safe partitions where you load in recovery software. So partitions are used for all sorts of things. And there's a number of different possible versions you can have for each of those partitions. So, you know, your recovery software might be on whatever version 1.6 and your main line software might be on, you know, 2018.8. And, you know, your fallback software might be 2018.7. I'm just making all these numbers up, right? And different vendors, we discussed also, different vendors have different ways to represent the software. So it's going to be a string. I think I wrote that here somewhere. But anyway, it should be, it'll be a string because different people different vendors will have different ways to represent stuff. So does that make sense? Did I answer your question?
Well, yes, but what I was saying was more, in your instance view, in the list of software versions that we're going to add, should there be a third property there called like the active Boolean or something?
So in ANAI, that makes much more sense. So that could definitely be something that is and maybe I should make a slide to discuss this. that's a good point. So I think I don't know if I can just copy this row on the table. Yeah, so I think this particular thing was I just pulled from I think it was a Huawei presentation. right, so I think the software version list could definitely have that as an element. I guess it would be sort of a structured list of things, you know, and each element would be, I guess, would have a description.
You would have the square bracket for an array, and then you'd have an array of objects with description, software version, and
right. Right, and that would be a string, obviously a string, and there would be a Boolean for active tag or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I guess the other question I had related to this is, do these software versions sort of have a life of their own, or do they need to be completely tied to that PNF? So example being, when we have like VM images, those are really separate and can apply to many VMs that have been spun up. Is it the same for software version, or do you really want to tie it directly to that individual PNF?
So unlike a VNF, a PNF has its own specific software for each and every unit. Okay. So it's the answer is it's the latter, right? It's unique to every PNF.
All right, cool. I just wanted to make sure that this would work out.
Future thing that you have some, I don't know, bank of refrigerators or something that are tied together. I don't know, some, you know, 10 toilets in a complex are tied together and share software. I don't know, maybe in some far future thing, but in a 5G base station RAN, which is the thing we're concerned with here in Casablanca, every base station has its own unique software loaded on it, and that's separate and distinct from other base stations. Now there are configurations where you can have like these multi-rack installations, where essentially you can kind of bundle multiple base stations in a single sort of housing. But even then, in those cases, each of those base stations have it's a little bit of a lie. But in most, I would say most configurations, they'll have their own software. In very, very rare cases where you have like kind of one slave to another, you might have that other unit. But even in those slave configurations, there's generally there's at least all the architectures I've ever seen, you know, there's going to be like kind of like one main unit, and that main unit has all the, you know, does all the stuff to the outside world. So I think we should design it so that there's just each PNF has its own unique individual software.
Yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure that was the intent, and it sounds like it is.
Yeah.
Then the last question I had is, so you had on the previous slide, the repository for the software?
Yes, right. Hold on one
second. Is that, go ahead, finish writing that.
Let me just capture what you just said here.
Just before you move away from that, so are you suggesting that if you had, say, 5,000 base stations, there would be 5,000 unique versions of software?
Not unique, but maybe the unique isn't the right word, or need some explanation. So suppose you know, the west side of town is in region ONAP region 1, and the east side of a city or country or whatever is in region ONAP region deployment 2, right? And a network provider wants the software version, the main software version, you know, they want the whatever August build of the software, and here you've got the, I don't know, the July build, let's say, something like that. And so a set of PNFs in the west side, we ideally want all of these on the software version 2018.8.0.01, let's say, and, or let's make a letter, you know, A or something, and we want, you know, the east side to be 2018.0.07d, right? Again, I'm just making these numbers up. so you'll all these PNFs, these, let's say, you know, 400 PNFs on the west side, would I'm probably going to want them all on this particular software version, right? So it's not that each and every 10,000 of those have a different version. It's that each of those PNFs may have a different software version than every other PNF. So, you know, we have a some set of PNFs, you know, PNF 1, 2, 3 or whatever, and these different PNFs can have they all manage their own unique software, which could be different than somebody else, right? So, you know, we, I have no idea how many things of software there could be, you know, this might be 25 or whatever. And even though we expect, you know, if this is a, let's say a West Side, you know, PNF, it's, and these are East Side PNFs. You know, it's possible that these two different PNFs have, these different PNFs have all sorts of different softwares on them. I'm not sure I'm explaining myself well, but, you know, each PNF has its own disk drive and its own repository or set of software that it can have on it. We would expect under sort of normal deployments that you would have regions that you would want all kind of loaded on a particular version of software. But that doesn't mean that every single PNF will share or have that specific version of software. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that goes back to the previous question. So you're creating the A, B, C, D versions independently somewhere in your repository and then just referencing them, right? You're not actually creating a new software object for every PNF. Like you, here in your example, you'd have the A software version created three times versus creating it once and then referencing it from three different places.
Right. So, yeah, correct. So I would expect in ONAP that we would create this object, let's say, to represent this software, and then I would reference it. Yeah, exactly. I would reference it in runtime in ANI that,
okay.
That, you know, here's what
this thing is. So that was what I was getting at. Thank you, Hyung. In that case, software version list does not work.
And putting the...
Because you would actually have a bunch of related software version objects in your relationship list.
Oh.
So you would be making a new object type software or whatever we want to call it. Maybe software is a better descriptor than software version. And it wouldn't be a list. It would just be softwares or whatever at the higher level. And it would have those properties and one of them would have to be a unique key.
So let's step back a second. When does something need to be an object? When does something not be? Like what?
I'm sorry, I got to break in. It's we're running way over our time.
Yep.
Is this something that we could, you know, maybe set up a separate session? It sounds like this discussion needs to continue, but we're past our agreed community meeting time, and I don't want to. Actually, there's other business we need to get to. So. Can we take this to the wiki, or is it something? Are there meetings that are currently discussing these things? That
I can meet this afternoon. If do you know, just maybe Christina, are you available, or one or two other people who are interested? I can just meet with them, just so we can kind of get a basic framework, so that we're not using everybody's time. Is that reasonable?
Yeah, I should be free after 3:30 Eastern today.
Okay, right. That works. Set up a meeting. Yeah, and let's you and I just come to a basic solution and then bring it to the community. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. So in terms of other business, as always, you know, Sonar coverage is important. I know that new repos are being delivered. Please make sure that we are not decreasing existing repos, and that you know, new repos have to hit the 50% Sonar code coverage. Nexus IQ reports have been fixed. So for the set of repos that you're responsible for, make sure you're checking. The ones that are, you know, for which there is no non-vulnerable dependency, we'll document those on the wiki. But we still have a number of critical and severe exceptions on those reports. And anything else before we end?
Who else should I invite? Is anybody else interested in this meeting to discuss the software versions?
I can't be on that call, but Christina can definitely represent the
okay,
the modeling side.
I just wanted to ask if anybody else wanted to join. Okay.
I have one quick question. You mentioned in the email that an ANAI instance crashed in Beijing. Has that been taken care of?
So there was two reports of ANAI crashing in the lab. The resources container failed twice over the course of several weeks. What I've been looking at is, it's very hard for us to know why that failed, especially when it was only, one time in two different labs. And there are no logs. So I think I think the ones where it's happening every day, that would probably be easier to troubleshoot. So what we've asked for is for the logs to be retained. And if it happens again, we'll look at the logs and see what went wrong. But if someone, has any thoughts on the suggested if we're not starting up quickly enough, if we could reset that parameter, please let me know. Otherwise, we'll wait for better logs that indicate what actually happened. All right. So we have the urgent issue of getting the AAF installed, and I'm going to keep this bridge open. Actually, everyone who's not interested in AAF can feel free to drop. But I'm going to invite folks from Clamp to the bridge here to have a working session with Pavel, who has access to the lab. So thank you all. And if you have anything, any issues, please send me an email. Otherwise, we will talk again soon. Thank you, everyone.
Hello, okay. Everyone.
Hi. So I could share my screen and show you what I did. Wait.
Yeah, go ahead, Pavel. So thanks for joining. Is it Zhu?
It's Xue.
Xue? Okay. Thank you for joining. Pavel has done some work and has access to the AAF in the lab, but we're getting stuck trying to configure AAF. So we're hoping that you maybe help us.
Yeah,
sure. I'll try my best.
Yeah. So actually what I did, a small little testing project for in Java, where I integrated what I identified as a key component from AAF. It's the caddy filter. Basically, now when I try to access the web service, I get this message from Kedi, so I see it works. It says no TAF field authorize, blah, blah, blah. And I'm getting a 403. What we want is authentication not based on a client certificate, but on a username and password. This is the testing instance where we have access. From the documentation, as far as I understood it, what I need to do is I have to create a namespace. The only one I was allowed to create under this user was a child of an existing namespace. So I created an org on a portal.test. And here, what I wanted to do, I'm not sure what actually credentials means from the, I understand that the model has namespaces, roles, and those roles have certain permissions and users can have certain roles. Mm-hmm. I didn't see what credentials means, but I assumed that what I need in order to integrate with AAF and to have a user or some username and password is create here's something with password. When I try to do it, like say I say here tester 2, and I try to create with password.
Mm-hmm.
I get this, so I say here ABC, 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 and I submit. I get attempt failed, specifics withheld. I'm not sure if this is an error message or it's just, or the system is informing me that it will not explain why the attempt has failed. Mm-hmm. If it shouldn't inform me, I would expect there would be nothing here. Basically this is where I got stuck. So
okay.
I managed to create a certificate like user, or I'm still not clear what credentials are, but this is not what we want. We want something with a username and password.
Yeah. Okay. So actually for Clump, it's a little bit different because we are using certificate and which is provided by Jonathan directly. So I didn't create by myself. It seems indeed.
But the approach, just the general approach, is that correct that I create whatever credentials here, and then I would use this. This is my second question. I have to then use this auth Docker agent SSH thing, which generates some properties, and I use it inside my project, because I was not very clear, or I didn't understand it completely from the documentation, because it's overlapping with setting up some Docker volume. I'm not sure how that ties into the whole AAF concept.
Okay, so from what I have understand that indeed you need to have a valid username and password. And so this is the first step. And then you need to put the AF related configuration files, which will be needed for the Cardiff filter. So did you already have that or not yet?
The configuration file?
Yes.
But is this one or it's another one? Because one is generated through this script, and basically what it does is, this was a little bit surprising to me, what it does, it's starting some Docker. That's, or it's Docker image. I'm not sure if this is the thing I need, or there is another one in the documentation. Wait, it was here. There is another one like kedi.properties template, but it doesn't say. I was not sure what this things were or if they were necessary or something.
Actually, this AFID and password is the valid credential you should use. It's the one normally when you create it successfully, you should put it here.
Okay. So when I create the user here in the UI, it will generate a caddy.properties?
Yes. No, probably, maybe it will not generate automatically, but you have to put the parameter in this.
Yes. And what is AFID?
AFID is the username. It's the username you have created. Yeah.
But yes, and I was not sure what the username is, because there are concepts like fully qualified identity and I don't know what. So we have
okay, because I see you log in with the demo at people dot this is a username already.
Yes, and when I go to the namespace, as it's loading, and when I go to the original namespace where I belong, I see there are other users, but I haven't found any way how to create such a user. The UI has nothing like that, and also so then I thought that maybe the users are created through these credential details, and perhaps these are the users, and that I create them through this process. But I don't know why it's here credentials and not user details. So this was confusing to me.
I think these are already the existing users, the one you have seen,
yes,
which is under the admin.
Yes, but I was not sure how to create such a user. So my assumption is that I created here when I say a username, and then I assign it a password, or I create a user with username and password, or I create the user with a certificate. This is my assumption.
This part I don't know much, because I got a certificate from Jonathan.
You got it from Jonathan, yeah. And then there is command prompt, but this is like a more advanced version of the UI where you can do more things. There is, you can add user, but you cannot create one, or I didn't see it in these things. And sometimes this UI freezes, so it's I try to not to use it much.
Pavel, what would happen if you use the AAI certificate to log in? Does that work?
I don't know how to get access to it, because the certificate is probably tied to a namespace, and I don't have to the namespace. As a demo user, I see just this namespace, and when I tried it from the command line, it said something like you are prevented to read other namespaces or something like that.
Right, but I think the clan team was issued a certificate, right? Were you issued a separate certificate just to manage the credential set, or is it the same certificate that you were issued for your server?
But actually, when you log into this AFUI, you should already have a username and password, right? It's the demo.
Yes.
So you can try that already, maybe. You try, this one is the username. And then use the password. You put it there.
Password.
Yes. Yes.
And how do I manage then my permissions? Because I was able to create a role.
Mm-hmm.
but I was not able to assign permissions to the draw. So for example, the command line, every time as I assign a role to it, it freezes, but it creates the permission, but it doesn't allow me. I don't know if this is a software bug or I'm trying something which is not permitted. It creates, so these are all my tests that I try to assign to the role user one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it never gets assigned, so it always freezes and I have to restart the tab.
If you click on ground, on the right hand side.
Yeah. Okay, let's try this access. Nope.
Ah.
Okay, I think I tried this grand and it always comes up in all the namespaces.
Yeah. Okay. Otherwise, maybe go to the command line. Normally, I do it in the command line.
Ah, okay, then let's try it in a command line. And here
maybe help, yeah.
Yeah, permissions. I know it almost by heart, so it's grant.
Mm-hmm.
Or
then it's the you have to
the long string.
Yes.
My arrow. Or I create, just to be sure, I create a new one. Create access one for all instances, action read, and I assign it to user one.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean role one, and I think this is all. So now I submit.
Yeah.
Now it's frozen. It cannot change or do anything.
Oh, strange.
Yes, no, and here, when I go here, I refresh it. You see here it's access one, so it was created like the other. But when I go here, I would expect associated permissions to be not empty.
Mm-hmm. I see. So can you grant it separately? So not create, but just a perm grant.
Yes, I tried. I think I tried it, but we can do it. I will leave this open to just to cheat with all the command, and now let's say so I go permissions grant. Okay, so this is grant type instance read. This is action and now role. Okay, I think this is it. So permission grant type instance action role. Okay, now I submit. And it's frozen again, so I cannot do anything. When we look here and I go, there is nothing. So I don't have any permissions here.
I
don't know if I, so probably this is a software problem, but maybe I'm doing some operation which was like not thought about, or maybe I'm using it wrong. I don't know.
I think it's probably the software problem, because I did the same thing mm-hmm. in the past to grant permissions, but normally mm-hmm. it's working from my side. So I don't know why it's frozen.
Yes, and assuming I would have the permission, so I assigned to this user, I assigned the role user one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and assuming I would have some permissions here, then all I need is this file here, and it would work. So, for example.
Yes, maybe I can show you a little bit what I have done. So, so that it will be easier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you see my screen?
Yes, I see it.
Okay. So for us, we had something similar. We have mm-hmm. been using Kadi filter as well. And so we use Spring. So we have put all the parameters in the Spring configuration file, but it will be the similar thing for you. So you just need mm-hmm. to configure the parameter and pass it to the Kadi filter. So here is all the configuration file we have used for AAF. Which is the one you have shown in the page. Mm-hmm. So normal, I don't know whether in your case you will have a key file, but for certificate we have that one. Mm-hmm. And also the AF locate URL is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have some password, which is equivalent to your username and password. And then, so this is the basic. Yeah.
How do you know all these properties and what the correct values have to be? How did you?
It's
because when I see the site, there isn't anything. There are like four things and you have a lot of them.
Yeah, there's not much you need to set. I think the most important one is the locator, which mm-hmm. Directs you to the AAF server. Mm-hmm. So this one is important. And you have to also, map this host name with the correct IP address so that it's able to find the AAF server.
Mm-hmm.
And also these parameters are important because it's this will be used to locate the best AAF server for your service, and then uh-huh. the log, and also I think also the username and password. So these are the main property files you need to use.
And the username and password,
mm-hmm.
they are username and password for what?
Is the one the AF ID is the username you have to put, and also there's the password you have to put in your case.
Mm-hmm. But
yes,
the username of the application, or what is the every application gets a user assigned?
Yes, kind of, yes. Actually, there are different types of credential. You have the one for the application, and you have mm-hmm. the one for the user. So the one you set in the property files should be the one for the application.
So this is a username and password for the application user, so to speak?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when they create namespace for your application. Normally, they should give you a valid application name and a password, then these values should be put in the property file.
Okay, and how did you figure out what all the properties are? Because when I do the documentation, there are like three things, or not that many, and you have plenty of stuff here. How did you know, for example, that you have to specify a KDE latitude, or that you, I think not even locate URL is there in the in the documentation?
Actually, we got it from. I have got a kind of sample file from Jonathan directly. So yeah, and yeah, in the wiki, it's not very clear.
Yeah, it's absolutely not clear what you have to do, and it's mixed with some things that where it says you have to create a Docker volume on your. So so I will, but you don't have to create one, or.
No, I don't do that because...
You just integrate the caddy filter class and you just set it up with this, hook it up with these properties and that's it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what I thought.
Yeah, and then I also have used the caddy filter, which I get all the parameters I read from the file I showed before, and I put it
in it. How I then, wanted to do it in the init, and basically, So you, but you just read these five. You just need these five.
There's not too much. This five is a little bit special, but so I set it specifically. But the others is already read there, I think.
But they are not being used?
I think it's used. I didn't know why there's...
For example, the latitude and longitude, I don't see them here.
It should be there. I think we have read it somewhere already. This part is another settings which is related to the certificate. So I have added it here. Mm-hmm. But all the other parameters are already read. I think I've set it somewhere, but I forgot.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. Okay. So, and who is someone who understands the UI or someone who I might discuss this problem with creating a username password in the UI. Is it Jonathan or does he have some colleagues who are also knowledgeable about the technical details?
I think Jonathan will be the best, but he is busy. I have another name, but when I try to, I have discussed with that guy a little bit, but I don't think he's very...
I think Sai is on the call. Sai?
Hello?
Sai, are you on?
He's muted. Can you unmute him?
Yeah. James, can you hear me now?
Yeah, yes. I can hear you now. Thanks. So I think Sai is Jonathan. You're Jonathan's delegate while Jonathan's out, right?
Yeah.
So is there, do you think that you'd be the best person for us to ask our questions about AAF?
Yeah, I mean, if I can handle those questions, then I'll help on that.
Yeah, okay, because, then. Okay, then, I start from the beginning. Do you see my screen? Then I start sharing. Share screen. Okay. Do you see my screen?
Yeah, I'm able to see.
Yeah. So just to recap, what the goal is. Want to do is integrate our web services in the project ANAI with AAF running Beijing instance. We don't want to use for client certificates for now, but just want to use username and password. I have been given.
So you're using certificate,
yes. I have been given this user demo at people blah 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 with the password. What I would like to do is I created my own namespace. It's a child namespace that I was in. And here I wanted to create another user, which I would use as a testing user for the integration.
Okay.
I'm not sure how to create users. I assume that it's here, these credential details. I would expect here the word user, but I think these are users. And here, I imagine that I create a user with a process like this. I type here tester two, and I say, okay, I want to create user with a password. Yes. And here I just type some password, ABC, ABC. And when I submit, I get the error. Attempt failed, specifics withheld. I'm not sure if specifics
withheld just maybe informed. We are typing the simple generic password. That's the wrong one. So if you read the things a bit on the down there, it is clearly mentioned. We have to use proper proper set of passwords. See?
Okay, I think I did it, but let's try it. So I say A, B, C. It has to have like a dot and some numbers and another dot. And so this should, so it's between six characters. It has a special symbol. It has numbers and contains letters. I carefully copy paste this. And I submit, and it says attempt failed, specifics withheld. I'm not sure if specifics means that the system won't tell me the actual problem, or this is the description of the problem itself.
Yeah, can you go back to the namespace once?
Yes.
Home.
Mm-hmm.
My namespace is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so which one you are using here? So you are in
that. I was testing it in test, but I got the same problem in Portal. In both.
Okay. Can you click on test once?
Hmm.
Click on the test. Algonap portal test.
Yes, test.
So description, admins, owners. Roles are there. Can you click on credential, credit details once again?
Just one more information. I tried it also as a cert artifact, and I was able to create a user, if this is a user. But in ANAI for now, we want the one with the password.
Okay, so you're
Could you repeat? I didn't understand.
Yeah, I mean, you are able to create the X509 credentials. I mean,
yes. Well, here it says no certificate instantiated. I didn't investigate this because for now our use case is to have a password.
Okay, let me. Can you type M12345 as the ID?
12345?
Yeah, M12345. M.
One more time?
Sorry. The ID should be starts with a name, some alphabetical.
Yes,
M,
yes, sure.
M12345.
M12345. Okay, and I click this.
Yeah, with password.
Okay. And I take this password, which conforms the rules.
Yeah, let's try this one.
And I click submit.
Yeah.
What I was thinking about is if we cannot log into the Kubernetes pod or Docker container and look into the backend log what's happening. But I don't know where to start searching because I don't know much about the system.
Yeah, because earlier I haven't seen this issue. Okay, let me get into the server and then I'll try on my end and I'll get back to you. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah, sure. And will it be today or tomorrow or just...
Yeah, it will be today.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be starting into that in the video server, so I'll see what is wrong with it.
Okay, then can you send me an email if you figure out the problem?
Yeah, I will.
Okay, and maybe I'm not sure. Maybe I will need one quick session just to. Yeah, we'll see if I because I'm not sure how to properly create the caddy dot properties. As I understand, Jonathan sends the property file which has all the properties I need. I'm not sure if you have the property file or I can take it from the Climb project maybe and adjust it, but I would also need the description of the property of the certain properties, what they actually mean. But okay, this is another problem. I think the biggest one is now how to create a user. Oh, and when you will be in the backend, I will wait. I share the screen just for one more second. I have another problem. As I understand the model. From the diagram, there is a namespace. The namespace contains roles, and roles have permissions.
Yeah.
Every time, and what I did is I assigned a role to this demo user. It's called user one, I think, the role. Not the best name for a role, but whatever. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to assign permissions to that role. But every time I do it in the UI. The UI gets frozen, and the permission gets created, but it never gets assigned to the role. So we created before you came. We tried it several times, and I can show you. It always results first in the freeze of the UI. And here I have a collection of created permissions, but I never am able to assign it. What I would expect, I never seen the system in production, but I would expect is that the permissions are here when I assign it. That never happened. And I don't know if this is a problem. Then a second path, what I thought is, that I can grant permissions to the roles somewhere in the UI, not through the command line, but when I click it, I always get a 404 or some problem.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I'm not able, I tried to in a command line, create the permission and assign it, then to grant it an existing permission. I try to create the permission on it on its own and then grant it, but no use case worked for me. And I haven't seen anything which would help me in the documentation. So the latest doesn't even have a description of how this should be. So this is what I derived from the help here in the GUI. Yeah.
Okay.
So this is the second issue I was facing. So if you have time, maybe you could look at both, because we need the role with permissions in the long run anyway. Yeah, and this is like all from my side.
Yeah, sure. I'll check it and I'll get back to you shortly.
Okay, perfect. Then thank you, Sai. Thank you, Hue. And yeah, hear from you soon.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much. Jimmy, I think you can close the bridge if you want. Are you there, Jimmy?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Sai, and thanks, Zoe, for joining.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
Bye.